Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The Bluebuns is grooving, that rhythm and blues, that's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte, and we have some awesome guests on the show today. I think it was about 7 or maybe 8 years ago, some of my buddies who, actually people who have been on the show quite a few times, Brian Miller and Capital Tomlinson and Phil Ward and Nate DeMoss, all these people, they were like, hey man, let's go grab a drink. It was one day after brunch. And they're like, let's go grab a drink and play some pool at the Brooklyn Inn. And I was like, the Brooklyn Inn? Oh, shit, I've never been there before. And I've passed by it a few times. But now it's a place that I feel like I'm very familiar with after all these years. But you know what? I don't think I have the whole story. So in the studio today, would like for my good buddies, Tom and Joel from Brooklyn. You guys know quite a bit about this subject and actually written a book about it a little bit ago. And you just celebrated your 130th birthday. And why don't you give us a rundown, man? There's probably too much to say in 30 minutes. But why don't you give me a little bit of a history lesson here today?
Well, you know, actually, Damon, I think it was about 115 years ago that when you stopped in, and you've been drinking there ever since. So, it's been a nice long run.
Yeah, I'm surprised I made it.
Nothing changes over there.
Joel is really the man behind the pen. You know, I had the pleasure of becoming good friends with Joel from across the lumber, and he'd already been doing research about the history of the inn.
Yeah, you know, what happened was there were a lot of, you know, I've been hanging out there for a long time, and there were a lot of people said, well, you know, the bar is old. Obviously, it looks old, but what was going on? You know, how'd this happen? And people thought, had different theories about it. And I thought, you know what? We got to go figure this out. I'm going to go find out what happened. And so I just started to dig up the information. You know, and I found out 1885. That was it.
It's when they July 21st.
That's right.
Man, I was lucky enough to be there on the night of the 130th. That was really cool. That was a special night.
That was a
night.
Good time.
It was a very good time. You know, before that, you know, hanging out there, it just happens to be like in my neighborhood, and also happens to be just a few blocks down from my bar too, which is great. It's very convenient for me. I know you probably see too much of me over there, but you know. But yeah, I mean, like,
in 130 years, I'll be dropping into Grand Army.
Hopefully, man.
Yeah,
let's knock on this wood. So how did you research this bar? Like, where did you start getting information?
Well, you know, I went to the city and went to the city archives, New York City Archives on Chambers Street, and started to look up information about that address. And I noticed in 1885 the taxes went up, the property taxes. And I thought, something happened here. And so I just kept digging, and you know what? There's the Brooklyn Public Library keeps the Brooklyn Daily Eagle newspaper issues, and you can do some searching there. And I did some searching at the Brooklyn Historical Society. Mm-hmm. Tom and I went poking around the surrogate court and read the wills of people involved with that property.
Yeah, I mean, Joel's a maniac because I mean, throughout all this research, we're pulling dusty files and books out of these. You know, the guys out at the city offices were looking at us like, "What the hell are you guys doing? Blowing the dust off these ledgers, you know, from the 1880s. And next thing you know, we end up in a middle village in Queens at the German Lutheran cemetery, you know, looking for a tombstone. Went up there with a bar rag and a bottle of German beer and some cheese and bread, and found the original, well, the tombstone of Anton Zeiner, who was the...
He found at the bar.
He opened it in 1885, and we went up there, and we found his tombstone. He hadn't had a visitor in quite a while, but we took a knee, took the bar rag, soaked in a little beer, and cleaned it, made sure his grave was kept clean.
That's amazing.
That was a good time. So you know, it goes from like the. From the stacks of a library, and then you end up in the middle of a cemetery. It's a beautiful journey, you know.
That's amazing, man. I know that Dave Wondrich is a frequenter of
Brooklyn. Dave comes by all the time.
Yeah, he has a kind of a similar story about finding Jerry Thomas's grave.
That's right. He went out to Professor Jerry Thomas. They went out there and hoisted one up and mixed some drinks. Which is something I've wanted to. Were you on that trip?
I know
there was a bunch of guys, Dale and Julie Reiner.
They met up at another old bar, the Old Town Bar.
Sure, the Old Town.
They met up there, and I got there a little late, and then I just kind of like I wasn't able to join because they were moving fast. So I don't know if I was going to be able to catch up with them.
But that's another great thing about working with Joel and doing the research for this book is that. You know, Joel being a wise man to begin with, but also an architect and with a great aesthetic, points out certain details about the bar that when you walk into a saloon somewhere else, you're immediately drawn to those details, mm-hmm. and it enriches your experience no matter what bar you walk into. And in New York, we have the opportunity to... to dip into Old Town, McSorley's and stuff.
Yeah.
That's one of the amazing things about the Brooklyn Inn is that it's you know, you walk in and you say, well, this bar is a little, you know, faded, a little bit worn out, and it's true, but you can feel it. You can feel that deep history there, and the evidence is just all around you.
Yeah, the first things that I noticed about it, because I've always been really into architecture as well, and especially like old bars, you know, like looking at the old Brunswick Ball Colander catalog,
sure,
you know, and seeing all the, you know, the detailed work mm-hmm. that you can mm-hmm. essentially pull from, and, you know, things like the stained glass windows that are up above, like where the kitchen used to be.
That's
and,
right. Yeah.
That, it's just, like, and plus, like, the really, really tall ceilings and those mirrors behind the bar are,
you know, it's grand. Ominous. It's a grand space, and that was the idea at the time, was to make a saloon, and a saloon was a salon. It was meant to be a beautiful room, and it was meant to elevate. And those guys invested a lot of their money and a lot of their effort to make that happen. It was a German bar. Run by Germans. It was backed by a German brewery that was based here in Bushwick, where we're sitting right now. And they had German wood carvers and German stained glass makers. And that's what brought it together. And the details, too. I mean, there's even a swastika in there. Of course, it predates the World War II and all that. But... there's some symbols in there relevant to their history.
The swastika it predated what Adolf Hitler would take and mm-hmm. and twist it into his own perverted vision, because traditionally the swastika was a symbol of it was life, right? It was
the symbol in Indian and South Asian cultures meant good luck but the Germans felt they had a connection to it, and they used it as a symbol in the 19th century. It symbolized the German people and unification of the German people. But It was so it was something that they included in when they built the bar.
Wow, that's amazing. So it predated the Third Reich by
decades. It was it was a positive symbol.
Right. When,
it was a positive symbol.
Emblazoned in the tin ceilings in each corner of the bar, and it's still there today.
Wow.
Another symbol that you find underneath the bar is carved into the wood is the Volknut.
Volknut.
And the Volknut is it's a three part knot of a line, and it's a symbol of the god Odin, and the three parts symbolize man's physical capability and inspiration and intoxication.
Oh yeah.
That's awesome, man.
We try to live up to that each night. Join us.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's obviously it's a very beautiful bar, and I love the fact that it has been preserved. I mean, like, you know, American culture doesn't really allow for us to preserve things like bars, you know, like usually it's like, all right, well, it's a fucking bar, like, yeah, let's turn it into some condos or whatever. But it's amazing that it's been around for long.
You know, it's a survivor, and there aren't that many of them. I mean, you mentioned the Old Town is another one, and White Horse Tavern and Finelli's,
McSorley's,
McSorley's. So there aren't that many. You know, that this is an old saloon, and most of them didn't survive Prohibition.
Or they got remodeled, too.
Yeah. Like, you know,
You know, but
that's why I think one of the charms of the Brooklyn Inn is that, you know, a lot of places, maybe they've turned into almost have like museum qualities or disc qualities. The Brooklyn Inn just is still like just a old working gal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a little bit battered, a little bit worse for wear, but it's still... You know,
the bar's kind of leaning.
It's
like sagging a little bit.
It sags in the center a little bit at the right angle. A pinball will roll to the center.
Yeah, if you're not careful, your drink could just slide away from you.
But you know, Thomas Wolfe said about the concourse of Grand Central that when you walk to the center, you could hear the sound of time. You know, the great murmur of the Grand Concourse. And I remember walking into the Brooklyn Inn for the first time and stopping and recalling Thomas Wolfe and thinking, like, in that room, that beautiful, tall-ceilinged room, you can hear the sound of time in there. You know, you can feel ghosts. You can feel, you know, good times. You can see blood and tears and liquor on the bar all mixed together in a beautiful swirl. And I think that, you know, that it still happens today. And I think that's why it's still strong, the Brooklyn Inn, going strong.
Absolutely, man. And, you know, it's funny, you know, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, it's like, it's also, there's a, you know, with New York City, well, really any city, man, you know, we're, especially with like the Renaissance of like the revival of like classic cocktails,
right.
You know, we've gotten into these old bars again. Like a lot of us, man, that have been into this for quite some time. You know, we seek out these places, you know, these other saloons and establishments in New York City, and it's like this one. You know, you don't see like a lot of the other old bars. It's like it's not covered in bullshit like Guinness ads and like clovers for like St. Patrick's Day from like 7 years ago.
Right.
Or whatever.
There's not a trace of neon in there.
Right. Or, yeah. And it's like a time warp, man. And I remember going in before, like years ago when there was still a kitchen off behind the bar. And I mean, I know it's grandfathered in to where like you don't necessarily have to have food for your liquor license and all that stuff, but turning that side room where it was a kitchen into like that little parlor room was like huge. And like I've definitely spent some times in there with like some friends, just like hanging out, like, and you kind of get like, and then there's also the other like side kind of like parlor room like right across from the bar, that little like cubby, like that stuff is like, it's just, man, if you sit in there, it really takes you away, man. And it's really, I think it's super important for us, especially in New York City, because like it's not a vacation town, man. We work hard, and it's like it's nice to have that kind of like transporting location.
Yeah, you know, to promote romance.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it's serving the same purpose that it did the day it opened.
Yeah,
and, that's right.
And you can feel it. You know when you're in there, you know that this has been going on for 130 years. You know, we're the same guys that were sitting there 130 years ago.
Yeah.
And I've been there since 1903, so I should know.
You're as old as Harley Davidson. All right. And Miller High Life at that.
Oh, that's right. Actually, right.
Which I usually enjoy in there.
Yes, we do proudly serve Miller products.
All right. Let's take a quick break, guys. And when we get back, we'll continue talking about the Brooklyn Inn with Tom Joel. Just a moment.
Dig.
Hi, this is Harry Rosenbloom, host of Feast Your Ears here on Heritage Radio Network. This is my first season as a host, but at the Brooklyn Kitchen, we've been supporting Heritage Radio for many years, and I really believe in what Heritage does. It is a fantastic network that really highlights everything that is going on in food in America, from restaurant openings to farms, to my show, where I feature interesting people with interesting stories related to food. But Heritage is a not-for-profit. We don't make any money. Most of the hosts do this because we love to do it, and we really do need your help as listeners. We'd love to have you listen, whether you can give any money or not. The website will still be up. You can still stream your favorite shows. But if you do like the programs here on Heritage Radio, we really would encourage you to go to the website, heritageradionetwork.org, click on the beating heart in the upper right-hand corner, and give whatever you can. If you drink coffee every afternoon while you listen to shows on Heritage, then maybe you can give us the cost of a cup of coffee once in a while. If you want to become a larger member, there's all kinds of great things you get if you become a member of the station and a larger supporter. So please join me, join the Brooklyn Kitchen, join our other great sponsors, and become a member.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. We have Tom Joel. Speaking of the Brooklyn Inn in Borum Hill in Brooklyn, New York, we're just actually, you know what, Joel, you mentioned that, you know, some of these old breweries, like especially, you know, the Utterhuber brewery was, you know, back in the day, like, you know, cocktail books and bars were sponsored by breweries and distilleries.
That's right.
You were mentioning that a lot of these breweries were around here.
The Utterhuber Brewery was very close by to where we're sitting right now, and
just a couple blocks, right?
Yeah, that's right. And Bushwick was the German neighborhood back then. It was referred to as the Eastern District because Brooklyn was expanding back in the middle of the 19th century, and they added the towns of Bushwick and Williamsburg, and they were always referred to as the Eastern District, but the nickname was Dutchtown, and the Germans lived here, and they had the breweries, and Utterhuber Brewery was the second largest one, after the Rheingold Brewery, and they financed bars. They lent money to bar owners. They bought buildings with bars in them. They owned effectively, either through holding a mortgage or owning the building outright, they owned thousands of bars.
Wow.
And they financed the Brooklyn Inn. They loaned the money to Anton Zeiner when he wanted to open up a great bar. And they also had a woodworking factory where they were building bars.
Which is where the bar for the Brooklyn Inn was carved,
the German woodworkers that we were talking about was a factory on
wow.
Moore Street, also not too far from here, and they built bars there.
And I think the building where the Utterhuber Brewery was is still there, right? And
the building
is still
there.
You can see the OH in the
that's right.
in the edifice
right.
there. And I think there's a bar in there now, right? Didn't there someone open a saloon?
I believe so.
And I think right after we conclude this radio program, that Joel and I and Damon are going to be taking questions over at that bar. So stop on by if you want to join us and hoist one up.
It'll definitely be questionable. So that's amazing. Okay, so like they,
I just got that.
Right? So you have to realize what happened when they financed,
which is totally illegal nowadays. Or I would totally
like
ask.
It's like payola, right? It's
like, yeah, you know, they of course it was a tied bar, and mm-hmm. and so they only sold the Otto Huber products there, and their beer, their most important beer they made was called Goldenrod.
Goldenrod Lager.
Yeah, and you know, it was a German brewery, so it was mostly lager.
Hence the old PJ Hanley's place turning into what they call Goldenrod, and they have the Otto Huber.
That's right, because it was also a tied bar, yeah. Mm-hmm. But the breweries not only supplied the beer, they supplied everything. They supplied cigars, they supplied the liquor, the wine, all the beer. They could only sell Otto Huber products from that bar. And they even provided the ice. They provided, you know, but before refrigeration, so they had ice delivery. Everything had to be paid to the brewery.
They're a full service facility.
Yeah, and you know, the brewery owners got rich, and the bar owners scraped by.
Yeah, that's
how it works.
I can relate with that.
You're still a good tipper, though, Damon.
I try, man. So let's talk about, I mean, like, what happened. I mean, obviously, this bar was built, you know, very long ago, and it's seen many things historically. One of the things I don't really know much about is like what happened with this bar during Prohibition.
Yeah. So the at that point, the bar was owned by the Heisenbudel family. Martin Heisenbudel ran the bar.
Lived upstairs, just like the Zeiners.
With his family, yes. This is after the Zeiners had passed on, and. You know, they referred to bars in New York were always referred to as cafes. Mm-hmm. And there was a law that they had to serve food, although some of them served the same sandwich over and over and collected it back at the end of each
We have one
visit.
Sandwich.
We have one sandwich.
Sell it to you.
Keep moving it around.
Don't eat it. Yeah. Because we have to sell the same sandwich to the next person. That's amazing.
But, you know, the German bars actually had a reputation for having good food. Mm-hmm. And... Dora Heisenbudel cooked upstairs in the family kitchen, and there's a dumbwaiter, the remnants of an old dumbwaiter in the room where they brought the food down, and they had decent food at German bars.
They were famous for their clam chowder.
That's right, on Fridays.
And down at the end of the bar, you can see what looks like, it's like almost like a burnt ring at the end, where I like to think is where they had the...
like a pot of chowder.
Yeah, like they were heating up the tureen, right? Yeah. Exactly. That's what I see when I see that circle at the end.
I just wonder what that was.
Yeah.
when Prohibition was approaching, the Heisenbudel family, they're actually tenants in the building, and they paid rent to the Otto Huber Brewery. The Otto Huber Brewery wanted to get out of the business when they saw Prohibition coming. And so the Heisenbudel family bought the building from the brewery, and they kept it going as a cafe. And when Prohibition came into effect, you know, people in Brooklyn weren't interested in that, and the city government wasn't very interested in it either. And the police were never really told to enforce Prohibition, but there were federal agents walking around looking for it. And so they were just discreet. They served alcohol, but they kept it hidden.
Just like now, it's a family establishment.
But
it was closed though for a while.
Wasn't it shuttered for eight weeks?
Or
they
something?
Found alcohol in the bar once, and a judge ordered the cafe closed for 8 months. And one of the neighbors commented that he'd walk by the building every day, and he would see. Martin Heisenbudel behind the bar just polishing the glassware. Didn't know what to do with himself.
Wow.
Waiting for the next drink to be served.
Every day he was in there.
You know, we had the opportunity to, through the research of the book, Joel found out that there was what do you think it was? The great-granddaughter.
No, Martin's granddaughter.
Martin's granddaughter,
yeah.
Joan Quick. And he said, here's her phone number. And I said, I'm just going to call her up. And I called her down in Florida. And, hello. Hi, this is coming out of left field, but my name's Tom Vaught, and I'm a barman at the Brooklyn Inn on the corner of Bergen and Hoyt. And she said, oh, the old saloon. And it started to open up this relationship and a dialogue between us that culminated in...
She grew up in the bar.
Yeah, she grew up upstairs. She was born upstairs, grew up. And we talked on the phone at first, and she remembered every Sunday coming down and sitting at the end, at the very last bar stool, while the rest of the family just scrubbed the bar from top to bottom every Sunday.
Wow.
And so it culminated in her and her two sons and daughter brought her to the bar.
It was the first time she had stepped foot in the bar in more than 50 years.
In 50 years. Wow. And her son, Ken, had reached out to us and said, well, Mom is, she might have a touch of the Alzheimer's, and, we're moving in that direction. So we want to bring her down just one more time to the old saloon. And so we were there waiting with coffee and a coffee cake and, a couple glasses of wine on the side. And sure enough, they walked in and you could see... Unfortunately, my mother suffered and eventually died from Alzheimer's. And so I was focused on her when she walked right through the door, and you could see her eyes widen and just brighten. And for a moment, she was transported back to her youth, looking around the room. And she said it again. She looked around and said, the old saloon.
That's...
And I, my heart swelled and you could just see her. She was a little girl for a moment, and we spent the afternoon with them. And
yeah,
it was beautiful.
Really, it was a special moment tonight. I wouldn't have ever expected my research, starting with some old files at the city archives, would lead to something like that.
Something emotional and heartfelt.
To really, it was meaningful for her and her children to see that.
I remember looking over at you when we saw that, and being like, I grabbed Joel's arm, and I said, "We've done something good, buddy."
That's incredible, man. That's it's great to see something positive coming out of of this old bar, man. Yeah, this old saloon.
It's amazing.
That's it's a wonderful story.
We
man.
Had no idea it was going to go culminate in something like such a beautiful moment like that,
man. It's hard to even, like grasp how powerful that moment have been.
It's great,
but
and we sent them copies of the book, which we haven't even talked about.
Yeah,
Joel's reluctant because he's such a master behind the pen and put together this incredible history of not only the bar itself, but the community at large that surrounds the bar, the evolution of the community, and the German immigrant experience. That Joel has put together in this book, which we sell at the bar, and people are like, "Oh, is it on Amazon?" It's like, "No, you got to talk to the bartender."
No, man. if you want it, man, where to find it.
You got to come and get it.
You got to, because it's one thing to get the book, but it's a whole other thing to experience it.
Yeah, to read the book in the bar. It's
I want to share the information with people that really care about the bar.
Yeah,
yeah, and I'd rather sit at the bar reading that book than being, staring at my cell phone, too.
Yeah, and you can actually order a drink from the guy that wrote the foreword.
Yeah.
That's me.
Yes, thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Joe.
For writing the foreword.
It was an honor to be asked.
Guys, I've been trying to get you on the show for a while, man. So psyched that you made the time to come out.
Definitely.
I love hearing about I learned so much today personally. Like I every time I go to that bar, it's one of my favorite spots in the world, and it's really been a pleasure having you on the show to talk to me more about it. I really encourage anyone listening to the show to go check out the Brooklyn Inn. on Bergen and Hoyt in Brooklyn, New York. It's an amazing place. And get the book while you're there.
Yeah, man. Come on down on, you know, come see old Tom Vaught on Mondays and Tuesdays.
Yeah, man.
That's the locals' night.
Yeah, you'll run into me there for sure.
Yeah, you'll run into me too.
Yeah, exactly. Joel's there. But only come down if you're cool.
All right, guys. Thanks so much, Tom.
Thank you,
Joel.
David.
Thanks
pleasure
for
coming
on the show
here,
today.
Man.
And you can definitely expect for me to be there whenever you're around, and other nights too. And also, you can come find us at the Otto Huber Brewery.
Oh yeah, for the Q&A. That's right.
Yeah, for the Q and the post show Q&A. All right, guys. That's it for the Speakeasy this week. Tune in to Heritage Radio Network for many, many other programs like this. Until then, cheers.
Let's go get a beer.
All right. Sounds good, buddy.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.